And so we began last Sunday night to look at what I titled throwing the kitchen sink, as it were, to get back from where we are now, from Genesis 3, back into Genesis chapter 2. And I began to try and explore with us, how do we as human beings help God, or be involved in the process that God has already started in helping mankind, our friends, our relatives, our work colleagues, our world? How do we help them get back into Genesis 2? And I began, for those of you who are here and you remember, talking about the fact that God has already thrown the kitchen sink at it. He sent Jesus. He sent his very own son. And again, as you hear, I said, you know, if I'm really honest, I would not throw my son to save your life. I find that really hard. I only have two sons, Jonathan and wherever Thomas is. Where's Thomas? He's in kids. Thomas is doing kids. Great. And you know, if it was you or them, unlucky. But that's how I feel. But God felt different. God looked at you and said, yeah, I'll sacrifice my son for you. If it's your first time in church, you have to know that's how much God loves you. God looked at you and he said, if I have a choice between saving you and having to sacrifice my son, I pick you. Isn't that incredible? What a God we serve. What a God who loves us, who's willing to sacrifice and say, God has already thrown the kitchen sink. And then when Jesus went back to heaven, he said, right, I'm not going to leave you alone. I'm going to pour my spirit, my Holy Spirit, part of me, into your life to empower you, to equip you, to gift you and give you all that you need to go and help others go from Genesis 3 back into Genesis 2. And I kind of unpacked that. I said a bit more last week. And then I said, well, what do we do? So God has called us to join in with him and throw our kitchen sinks at this mission, at this project of helping mankind get from Genesis 3 back to Genesis 2. And my first point that I started on and finished, I did finish my first point, was actually that we have to, as it were, go all the way through the door and give everything we have to God and hold nothing back. There can be nothing held back. If we're going to throw the kitchen sink, we have to be all in. And I challenge some of you, and I say thank you so much to so many of you. You came afterwards and said, God said this to me, God revealed this to me. And I was blown away. You so encouraged me. Can I just say thank you so much for all of you who came up and said things to me. But just if we need to throw our personal selves through the door that God has opened for us, if we're going to help others, as it were, through the door as well. Again, I don't want to go through that. You can listen to the message. And so I want to try and do the last 2 points in the next 20 minutes. So I've got 2 points left. So my second point of what we need to do, if we're going to throw the kitchen sink again in mankind from Genesis 3 back to Genesis 2, is this. We need to create a world around us like Genesis chapter 2. We need to create a world around us the best we can like Genesis chapter 2. And this isn't just a nice idea. I want to suggest that if you love Jesus, if God's Spirit lives in you, God has empowered and equipped you and already mandated you, instructed you and commanded and given you all the authority to make it happen. In Genesis chapter 1, verse 28, these are God's instructions to mankind. And these haven't changed. These haven't changed. God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number. We've done that fairly well, just in case you're wondering. And fill the earth. And he says, subdue it. Rule over the fish of the sea, the birds of the air, over every other living creature. He said, rule. Mankind needs to go and rule. You need to take hold of your environment and make it amazing. And he said, that's your role. That's what I've commissioned. That's what I've told you to go and do. I've empowered you to go and rule. And he says today, I believe, to every single Christian, you need to take hold of your environment and you need to rule it and create Genesis 2 wherever you go. It's a responsibility, but what a joy to try and create an environment where everyone lives like Genesis 2, that we can live in and our families can live in and lots of other people can enjoy accidentally. Isn't that amazing? And that's what we're called to do. Using the words I used last week, we need to create a place of love, A place where relationships are sweet and amazing. Where there's short accounts made. If something goes wrong, we quickly sort it out. Where there's forgiveness, where we think best of each other. We need to create a place of love and acceptance. A place where there's always room for one more friend in our hearts. And I've talked about these things before. And also a place where God exists. Where we have a relationship, an ongoing relationship with God in that environment. Where God and us do it together. Where there's no friction between us and God because we keep short accounts with God. And God's always allowed in our worlds, in our hearts. Because we love him and we know he loves us. And there's that love. And when people come in, they go, wow, this is such an awesome environment. I feel loved and cared for. Don't we all want that kind of environment? Not just for us, but for all the people that we know in our world. A place of peace. A place free of worry, free of stress. Now, I was preparing this, finishing off this afternoon. And I was thinking, I'm still working on that one. So can I just say, just kind of you to me, when I'm doing my messages, God speaks to me as much as he does to you. And I have to figure out this stuff in my life and accept that I'm not there yet before I get to tell you guys. I'm not telling you all these things and going, oh, but I've got it sorted. Because that wouldn't be fair and it wouldn't be right. You need to know I'm working on this stuff. And what God calls us is for all of us to work on it together. Is that okay? And so that all of us need to create this environment. So we need to create the best we can, a place of peace, free of worry, where we trust God, where we believe that God has got everything in hand, where Matthew chapter 6, when Jesus says, don't worry about anything, because God looks after the birds of the air, he looks after the plants of the field, and he counts the hairs on your head, he knows you, he'll take care of you. Don't worry. We actually try and create that environment where we're not worrying. A place of innocence. Wouldn't it be amazing to create environments around us where actually evil is kind of, it doesn't exist. The power of God and our decisions, our new hearts that God has given us of Christians so dominate. It's almost like evil gets pushed back. Wouldn't that be amazing? That kind of place that we would create in our worlds that people can come and enjoy and we can enjoy, where there is that sense of innocence as we meet, because evil is actually absent in our hands. Now, that's not as possible to do and other people spoil it, but as best as we can, how about creating an environment? A place where there's pleasure, not hedonism, not pleasure for the sake of pleasure because we want it, but a place where good and fun rules and reigns. I was at Blackpool this morning, and great service, really, really enjoyed it. And I was about to leave, so I went to find Katie and James and Sam and the other guys to say bye. And I found Katie with Dave Filmer, who did our giving talk. And I was thinking, Dave has a pink phone in his hand. Not very blokey, really, was it? Yes. And then I realized he'd borrowed Katie's phone, but he was taking lots of pictures. Lots and lots of pictures. And I don't know whether Katie was oblivious or she just didn't care, but there are lots and lots of pictures on your phone now, Katie. But I loved it. Why? Because church, the environments we create should be fun. And we should both create fun and allow fun to happen in our environments. Because that's what God intended life to be like. You know, he did. He created work, he created fun, and for us to live in that environment. I want to give you one or two phrases, which I'm hoping you'll write down and you'll remember, to, as it were, help us live and create this Genesis 2 environment. I think we need to live a life with no regrets. Live a life with no regrets. I.e., as best we can from now on in, try and only make good choices. Try and only make good choices. And that we would read the Bible and get advice before we make big choices to make sure that we're making wise and good choices. Michelle and I have tried, even before we got married, to always do what we think God would want us to do. Now, we've always not got it perfect, but we've always tried our best. And over this last 30 years, I really don't have very many regrets in my life. And some of you are really young here, and you have 50, 60 years left in your life. Why do you decide tonight, I'm going to live a life with no regrets. I'm just going to choose to do the right thing. It might cost me something at the time, but I'm going to choose to do the right thing. And when I look back in life, I won't look back and go, oh, I wish I hadn't done that. I'll just go back and think, you know, I've made the best choice I could all the way through. Wouldn't that be amazing? And even if, for those of you a bit more like my age or even older, we can start today. Let's make decisions. And the other side of making no regrets is to take opportunities. Do you know God gives us some amazing opportunities sometimes and we turn them down? Why do we decide not to do that? And if God opens a door, why don't you go like, that looks a bit scary, I'm in. Rather than, that looks a bit scary, can I not do it, please, God? But let's not, I mean, obviously some decisions are crazy, but God gives us lots of opportunities. They're actually good ones. They are a bit scary. They are a bit stretching, but they will lead to something incredible. Why don't we live our life of no regrets and create an environment where all those around us actually live in the same way? And we can create for our children, our grandchildren, for those that we love, an environment where there's no regrets. And you see, I'm dreaming for Jonathan Thomas and for Abigail that they'll live a life, and when they get really, really old, they'll go back. I don't have any regrets for my entire life. I've made some mistakes, but I don't have any regrets of the decisions. Wouldn't that be awesome? How about this phrase? We need to, I believe, work hard, but in ease. Work hard, but in ease. A Genesis 2 environment is not working. God calls us to work. I read it out last week in Genesis chapter 2, that God created the garden and he placed man in it and he said, you need to go and work it. So there was work to be done, but it was work with ease. And we're called to work hard as Christians. Occasionally meet people at the end of Sunday and they go, that was a long, busy day. I'm tired. Do you know what my heart says? Good. I'm glad it was. Because he should be. God loves us and created us and wants us to have fun, but he wants us to work hard. God deserves our very best work. You know, I think actually we should be more tired on Sundays if we've been serving than we are when we're in our secular jobs, in our other jobs. Not there's any really difference between secular, because everything's for God, really. But you know what I mean? And that's good. We should be tired because we've been serving Jesus. And Jesus, we've given Jesus our very best, and we've put our all in, and at the end of the day, we are a bit tired. That's good. It's not bad. It's not a problem. It's actually exactly the way it should be. Because God calls us to work hard. But also with ease, there should be that sense of peace in it, a sense of joy in it. And I'm not always good at that side of stuff. I work real hard and get stressed. But God calls us to work hard, but chill along the way. I love Christians that work incredibly hard and then seem real chilled at the end of it. I'm a bit jealous of them as well. But that's what we're called to live. And I think we need to help each other work hard, but work at ease. It's not either or, it's both and. It should be working hard for Jesus. It should be costing you. It should be taking hours of your life up. You should be tired, but you should also be doing it at ease. There should be a peace in your heart, a joy in your heart. Why? Because you're serving Jesus with the family and in the presence of the people of God. And yeah, we're working hard, but it should be that fun and I'm tired, but man, I'm happy. That was an awesome day to be in the house of God or to be doing this thing with the people of God. But let's create environments that we work hard and ease. How about this one? I like this one. This is mine. I pinched the other two so far. We need to live for and in eternity, not for and in the present. Let's live for and in eternity, not for and in the present. I think a Genesis 2 environment is an environment where actually the future is more important than the now. The future is more important than now. The Bible says in Hebrews 12, verse 2, we should fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who is in heaven already. And he goes on to say that there's a whole host, the heavenly host, who are cheering us on until the day of completion. And we as Christians need to be more concerned about the end than the present. Because you see, our dream is to create a Genesis 2 environment, but we're not there yet, right? But that's the dream. That's the future. And that's what we should be focused on, not on the present. It's not that we should ignore the present. I'm not saying that. But we should be working towards as best we can, creating that future that we want. And again, well, there's obviously one couple have really only been married for about 24 hours, but there's a number of young couples here. Can I encourage you from day one or from now to begin to build in your family life an environment for eternity to flourish? Both your children and your grandchildren, and for every single person that enters your home, an environment where eternity is the big thing. Because it'll make the present amazing. It will make the present amazing if eternity rests and rules in our hearts and our lives. It just will. And that's how Genesis 2 comes. It's when that's the big deal and we're just passing through the present. Many, many years ago, I was pondering on this now and the future forever. And God showed me something quite special. And what it showed me was that this world, in one sense, is quite grey compared to the multicoloured kind of view of heaven. And Hillsong have just written a song along similar lines. I can't remember the line because I didn't look it up. But when God comes into life, all the colours of the rainbow appear in our lives. So what's the line? Come on, you musicians. Well, shall we get Dave to sing it?
Sing it or say it. See the sun now bursting through the clouds, black and white turn to colour all around.
Yeah, that's what we're looking. He didn't sing it. He could do, though. He just chose not to. But it's that idea. The idea of somehow getting the multicolours of heaven into our worlds and overcoming and changing our black and white worlds that we live in. I.e., not living in Genesis 3, where it's black and white, but actually going and saying, no, we want to live in Genesis 2, where the colours of the rainbow, where every colour you can ever imagine that exists and can be experienced and enjoyed in all its clarity and all its fullness and all its amazingness. That's what we're trying to create as Christians. I don't have time to say anymore, so I'm going to move on. But let's create those environments. Let's be committed. Let's make plans and think about and talk in our families. How do we create a Genesis 2 environment in this Genesis 3 world for everybody in our world to experience, be it at home or at work, everywhere? And let's just remember always that God has then empowered us and instructed us to do it. It's not, I wonder if I can do it. God has called you and equipped you to go and do it. I'm not saying it'd be easy or quick, but you have authority and the power to go and do it, however difficult your world may first seem when you get into it. Why? Because God is the God of the impossible and he can do anything. So that's my second thing. The third thing I want to say about throwing the kitchen sink at getting people from Genesis 3 to Genesis 2 is this. And it's obvious, but it's worth saying and just exploring just for a minute or two. Is we need to call as many people as possible to join us in Genesis chapter 2. We need to call as many people as possible into Genesis chapter 2. Now, the only way to do that is through the cross, is through Jesus, through the gospel, through the good news. That's true, but that's what we need to do. We need to call as many people as possible. And you have to know this. And I've said this a number of times over the last few years, but I'll say it again because it's so hard for us to understand. The world knows this Genesis 3 world isn't right. It knows it's not right. It's looking for answers. It's looking for something. If you're here and you don't know Jesus yet, you don't need convincing that death and pain and suffering and chemical bombs and all those things, you don't need convincing they're not good. You know they're not good. You know that's not right. You know somehow inside your very heart and your soul that shouldn't happen and something should be done about it. You feel that. We all feel that because it's true. And we were made that way. Why? Because we're made to exist in Genesis 2, not in Genesis 3. I've never met anybody in all over the world, and I've been all over the place. I've never met anybody and had a decent conversation where they've gone, I know this world is exactly the way it's supposed to be. All of them say, the world is not supposed to be like this. They express it in all different ways, but it's the same thing. This isn't right. Why did that happen? It's not fair. If God's there, how did he let it happen? Well, I think God didn't let it happen. We made it happen. And it's time mankind and the church just said, we're allowed. God didn't let it happen. God gave us a choice and we chose to live like this. It would be a lot worse if God didn't stop things. Because it would. It'd be a heck of a lot worse if God didn't stop things. But we chose to live like this. And the world is desperately looking for you and me to tell them. To tell them that there is a Genesis 2. And there is a way back to it. It's desperately waiting for us to tell them. They did some surveys in America of why people didn't go to church. Do you know the number one reason why people in America don't go to church? The survey wasn't done in this country. The number one reason why people in America... Do you know what it is? Did anybody read the same survey? Number one reason was because nobody asked them to go. That was the number one. They said if somebody had asked us, we would have gone. If somebody just asked us, we would have gone. And I'm betting my house, if I was allowed to, because I'm sure my wife would say you can't. But I'm betting my house that if you asked everybody you know, would you like to come to church, someone would say, yes, I've just been asking, waiting for somebody to ask me. I bet my house that you would be stunned if you said, would you like to come to church on Easter? It's about this, just the story of how we get back into the perfect world. Would you like to just come? You'd be stunned. How many people say, oh, okay. Oh, no, I can't, but can I come the week after? I'm busy, yeah, I'm on holiday or whatever, but can I come the week after? You'd be utterly stunned if you would just ask them. The number one reason why people don't come to church, at least in America, I suspect the same here, is because nobody asked them to come. And most of you have people in your world that you've not asked to come yet. Can I just say, I'm not saying you have to do this week, though it would seem advantageous and easy with Easter and our birthday coming up to ask them. We need to call people. We need to, as it were, describe Genesis 2. Describe what happened and say, would you like to get back to Genesis 2? Would you like to get back to Genesis 2? And can I say, church, that we need to help each other in this task. We need to help each other in this task. If somebody needs your help to get their friend to church, or to anything to do with church, your answer should be, yes, I will move heaven and earth to come and help you in that task. And Shell and I have talked about this, so I'm allowed to say this. We just want to let you know, if we can help you get your friends involved in church stuff, we would love to. We have on the farm at the moment over 100 little cute lambs. They're very sweet. We've also got 9 very cute calves. And if we can host you and some of your friends that don't yet come to church, if we can host you so you can introduce them to something of church through us, and we can chat to them, and you can just, as it were, get them used to being around church people, we would love to host you on the farm. You just need to ask. You just need to ask. Our house was designed for people to come and visit. On Thursday, Michelle's hosting a sisterhood brunch. If you've got some girls who you know, who are not used to church, just have a word with Pastor Michelle and get them along. They'll come and meet some of the family here. They'll get to feed some lambs. We'll show them the calves. They'll have a great time. And you'll be surprised to say, would you like to come and just hang out on Sundays? They go, yeah. But church, if you love Jesus, move heaven and earth to help each other. Let's not say no to people when they need some help. And let's expand it. Let's help other churches. There's a whole stack of amazing churches in Preston. If we get a chance to help them, let's say yes. Or in Blackburn or Chorley or Leyland or wherever you're from. Blackpool, Lancaster, Northeast, if you're listening in the Northeast, or wherever. Let's say, yeah, we'd love to help. One of the things that Michelle and I have loved is if we've made friends in all sorts of different churches, and we've gone to the Northeast and Rick's there, and there's at least 2 really good churches up there saying, any way we can help, we'll help. We'll send musicians, we'll send some people, we'll just help. We don't care. We don't care if you're a different church. You'll reach for me for Jesus. It's a big deal. And people need to get back to Genesis 2. And let's be in to help each other and to help other people involved in that thing. And let's love people, but let's also be attractive. Can I just say a little word about being attractive? Is that all right? And as Christians, let's not be weird. Can I say that? Some Christians are real weird. I've met some of them. It's like, wow, if I'd met you first, I'd never have decided to follow Jesus because you're just weird. Good job I'm saved already. Now, we're all a little bit weird. Different, strange, have like different quirks and stuff. But let's not be super weird. And if you think you're a bit super... Now, we can be quirky. I mean, there's Kirsty over there. I love Kirsty. I've known Kirsty for I don't know what, 20 years? 30 years. Kirsty's amazing. I love her hair. She's kind of... She's who she's supposed to be in God. Very attractive. A bit quirky, but very... I'm not talking about that. Because you're awesome. It's all right, Kirsty. We can talk afterwards. I'm talking about being weird. Let's be attractive as people in our attitude, in the way we relate to people. Let's make people feel loved and welcomed and special. Let them see Genesis 2 through us and go like, wow, I want something like you have and something that you've created in your life. In our families, when people come into our families, let them see something that go like, I wish my family was like that. I just wish my family was like your family. Let's create something like that. And let's help each other in that process. Let's be attractive. Now, only do this if you're a good friend. But if your Christian friend isn't being attractive, just let them know really nicely. And yeah, that would be good. If they're a bit smelly or something like that, just mention it to them and go, oi, not very attractive. Need a shower. Catherine, leave David alone. It's not that bad, honestly. I know he's had a busy 2 days. He's defending himself now. He didn't hear. He just said to his wife, no, I smell really good. You don't know that, Dave, because you're not standing next to yourself. No, Rick says so. Oh, he does smell good. Okay. But sometimes, do you know you've met people, it's the small things that put you off them? Yeah? You've all met people like that. You go, oh, I'd really like you apart from that. That's a bit, Why don't we help each other as Christians? Just point these things out and say, you'd be amazing. I don't want to offend you. I don't have a... But if you... Oh, can you just change that a little bit? Yeah. I mean, I'm married, right? So I have a wonderful wife. Yeah. She changed my shirt on Saturday. Didn't you? Yeah. Things like that. That would be good. Yeah. Just keep going. Right, okay. Next point. And before I finish, because I'm... I want to just have a... Just say a little bit about introverts and extroverts. Is that okay? Because we're all called to be involved in the process of helping people into Genesis chapter 2. Now, I like my own space. And some of you, and I know some of you... You would prefer to be on your own than you would with people. That's the way God made you. So there's nothing wrong with being like that. That's fine. But you can't get out of the general call in your life is that you have to communicate with people and tell them about Jesus and tell them about Genesis 2 and tell them about the cross. You don't have an excuse to get out of it. But be patient with yourself because you'll find it hard work. If you're an extrovert, be patient with them because they're not like you. They're just not. They run out of energy much faster with people than you do. In fact, as you're energized by people, they're not. Energy is taken from them with people. So there's no excuse for those of you who feel like that. You have to engage with people and call them. Your friends, your relatives, your world is your responsibility to reach. You cannot dodge that responsibility. Every single person that you know who doesn't know Jesus, you have a responsibility with every single Christian in their world to let them know about Jesus. If you're the only person who knows about Jesus, you have the absolute responsibility to let them know over the next few months. Because if you don't tell them, who is going to tell them? Somebody once said many, many years ago, and I've remembered it, you know, if you get to the pearly gates and you meet that person that you're in work with for a number of years and you never told them about Jesus, and even though you could have created a chance, you could have created an opportunity. They asked you so many times what you did at the weekend. So many times. And you chickened every time to tell them what you did and why you did it. We do. All of us do it, right? If you have colleagues, we do it so often. What did you do the weekend? Oh, yeah, I went to church. It's cool. Bye. What would you say if they, pearly gates, you're going to kind of disappear into heaven. You're going like, bye. And they say these words, why didn't you tell me? Man, I don't care if you're about to go into heaven, you'll feel really, really bad until you go through the gates and it all gets sorted out in your head. But for those moments, you'll feel really bad. You really will. Let's take the opportunity. For you extroverts, you've no excuse. You should be telling everybody about Jesus, and you should be bringing lots of people to church. Now, the introverts, we need to help them, because they need help, because they'll keep bringing and bringing and bringing and bringing. They don't know what to do with them often once you brought them all, but we can help them with that process. We can befriend them and go a bit deeper with them, because that's our more normal natures. We do it together. But extroverts, don't look down on introverts like they're not doing a good job. And introverts, don't get frustrated. Let's all work together and do what we're called to do, and to do it effectively. If you're an extrovert, bring people. Talk to as many people as you can, as often as you can, about Jesus. For us who are a bit like our own space, we still have to do it. It takes energy, but we need to be invested in that. And let's help each other and get at this task. If we're going to get people back into Genesis 2, we need to be totally in here. All of us need to be in there. In our lives, we need to create a Genesis 2 environment as best as we can. And church, we need to do our level best in every opportunity, and even creating opportunities. We need to let people know and call them to join us in Genesis 2 through the open door that Jesus has given us by dying and coming back to life again on the cross.